the thump of his body afterward. I'd seen only a sliver of the Deveronian. More used to fighting than Rauf, he minimized his silhouette by flattening himself on the floor. It was his blaster, methodically taking apart the table now. Though the furniture was sturdy enough for the purposes of supporting a light lunch, it had not been built to withstand sustained fire from someone determined to punch through it with a blaster. I spread myself out flat in imitation of the Deveronian, planning to roll to my left and take shots at him as I moved. Neither of us would have much chance of hitting the other in that scenario, but a second later I had to go with it, because the table developed a hole and the bounty hunter was pouring shots through it with frightening accuracy. He probably had his elbows braced on the ground and one hand supporting the wrist of his firing hand. Tumbling to my left and squeezing the trigger of my blaster, I hoped some of my shots would be close enough to make him rethink his position, or at least slow down his own barrage. If I moved fast enough, I'd put the Jules landing ramp between us, and then he would have to move if he wanted a clear shot, and I'd be ready for him. He saw what I intended and stopped shooting to move first and skew the field of fire in his favor. He was a thin shadow, topped with a red globe of a head, and he moved fast. I quit rolling and tried to pick him off before he found cover, but I wasn't accurate enough. He ducked out of sight. And now I had to wonder if he would try to flank me, or wait for me to try to flank him. A loud crack sounded in the hangar and echoed off the walls, almost simultaneously with the taut, tapped cable noise of his blaster firing. Another crack, then silence. And I realized I recognized that pattern. "It's okay, Luke. He's down," Nakari called. "I just made sure he'll stay down, too." She stepped out from behind the landing ramp, slug thrower cradled in her arms. "You all right? You're bleeding." "I'll be fine. Azer Nessun won't, though. Rauf got him." The cargo magnate clearly should have cultivated the habit of spying on his employees. Nakari noticed Nessun's bloody remains on the tile floor and said, "Damn, I didn't want our knocking on his door to bring him that kind of end." "Me neither. We'd better get out of here if we don't want to end up like him," I said. Those two might have been acting alone, but they might have also called in some Imperials so they could hand us over.
"Or to serve as backup, yeah," she said. "I think we're just about ready. Status panels are looking green."
"Thanks for the assist, by the way." She shrugged a shoulder.
"Thanks for distracting him. He didn't see me until it was too late."
There was no time and really no need to investigate the body. Nothing about the bounty hunter would help us escape the system, and we had to be gone long before local authorities discovered what happened and tried to detain us. We boarded and closed the ramp, and I caught Nakari up on what Azer Nessun had said and the sequence of events before she had gotten involved. I made a quick trip to the bathroom to throw some disinfectant and adhesive on my scalp and forehead, hoping it wouldn't scar. R2 reported finding and eliminating not one, but five different tracking programs hidden in the nav computer's code sometime during the last few days. Drusel found another he missed, an Imperial sleeper, she called it, tied to the ship's clock. It would become active at a set time, triggered by the turning of the clock. Note our current course and position, and send a coded burst reporting it to the nearest Imperial world. There was no way to tell if they had been installed by a single person or several individuals. But at this point, we had little choice but to run and hope we had found them all. Lifting out of the atmosphere was even rougher than descending to the surface. We weren't streamlined now with the modifications, and at one point a particularly bad stretch of turbulence surprised Nakari, causing her to bite her tongue. We emerged into vacuum on a heading to the galactic south, where an interdictor and half a dozen Star Destroyers had bottled up exiting traffic bound in that direction. The Star Destroyers were sending shuttles of troops from ship to ship, inspecting and clearing them, and the interdictor turned off its projectors periodically to allow cleared vessels to go about their interstellar business. We traveled with the sublight engines running at about half their capability. The uneven thrust from the replacement had introduced some resistance into turns or rolls to starboard, but otherwise it gave us respectable, if not blistering, speed.
A curt Imperial query asking for our destination, business, and number of passengers and crew elicited a slightly impatient reply from Nakari, precisely the tone one should take. Once the Imperial traffic controller instructed us to hold course and prepare for boarding, and Nakari acknowledged, I asked R2 and Drusel if they were ready to run east and make the first jump.
Ready, Drusel said.
A clacking noise could be heard through the comm as she ran her fingers over her datapad.
Monitoring Imperial frequencies in system.
R2 confirmed he was ready as well. So I banked the Desert Jewel to port and opened up the engines to full. It didn't take long for the Empire to notice aloud that we did not appear to be maintaining our course. Nakari ignored two requests to resume previous course and acknowledge transmission. Drusel's voice blared over the intercom, reporting intercepted transmissions she had decrypted.
Bridge of the Interdictor is talking about us to the bridge of the flagship destroyer in the Southern Battle Group.
Talking is fine. They can talk all they want.
The destroyer has assigned a TIE squadron to pursue us. I calculate intercept in approximately 10 minutes. Too late to capture us before we jump, though they don't know that. A shuttle is following to board us immediately.
How long until we can jump, R2? 4 minutes, 8 seconds, he replied.
The destroyer captain believes we are the ones they are looking for. He wants the Interdictor to redirect its gravity projectors.
That wouldn't be good. They might be able to do it in time.
But now a third captain has interrupted from another destroyer. He argues that we couldn't possibly be going anywhere without an established hyperspace lane in this direction, and it is more likely that we are a distraction. In other words, the real fugitives are already waiting in queue, and once they move the gravity projectors, the lane to the south will be open and allow their escape. Amusing.
Nakari laughed in agreement.
The flagship captain points out that if I am on board, I might be capable of charting a new hyperspace lane on my own. That is sobering. I fear he may be distressingly competent.
Uh-oh, I said.
The Interdictor has just sent a request to Pulsar couriers on Kupo to confirm our transponder code and that we are conducting legitimate business on their behalf.
That's not going to end well, Nakari said. But it will take them some time to respond, I reminded her. Even if it's a minute,